You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Well, good morning again. As I mentioned earlier, last night at the Building Bridges banquet of the Islamic Speakers Bureau, I decided I was going to throw out what I had prepared, and it was already ahead of time. I mean, how unusual is that? So I got it ready because I knew I was going to be at this banquet. And then, of course, I ended up ditching it. So changing themes also meant changing the words of wisdom. And it turned out that Imam Suleiman actually quoted one of my favorite texts from the Quran. It's actually one of the only ones that I know because I hear it all the time at interfaith gatherings. And so that is what we're going to be using today as our words of wisdom. If you have your Quran with you, you'll find it, Surah 49:13. And, you know, if this is shocking to you, or if this is something that you don't think is appropriate to use words from the Holy Quran as part of our words of wisdom, I got to believe that you don't get it. I think one of the reasons we call it the words of wisdom, and at the end we say, hear what the Spirit is saying to the church, and not, this is the word of the Lord, is because we take these words seriously, but we don't see them as exclusive. We don't see them as particular to any one faith tradition. And that we embrace, especially as our commitment to praying well with others is such a part of our DNA here, says that, you know, we want to learn from one another. And I think it's a good thing for us to be able to read from one another's texts so that we can help dispel the myths, so that we can help understand what faiths who are getting a bad rap often have to face all the time. And so this particular passage is one that it's a pretty exclusive language. It talks about mankind and all of that, but I'm not going to mess with the Quran, okay? I'm just going to give you the official translation, whereas if this was the New Testament, I would often change that to something more inclusive. But let's hear this passage from Surah 49:13. Linda will first read it in Arabic. And then, no. She's just going to do it in English. All right.
O mankind, indeed, we have created you from male and female and made you peoples and tribes that you may know one another. Indeed, the most noble of you in the sight of Allah is the most righteous of you. Indeed, Allah is knowing and acquainted. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God. Hey, I want to go back and just look at that real quickly before we pray. Look, everybody, we, right, capital W, we have created you, the royal we, from male and female, and made you peoples and tribes that you may know one another. The purpose of our having been created, we were intentionally created, according to the Quran, differently, so that we can do the work, but also experience the joy of knowing each other and celebrating our differences and learning from one another. Indeed, the most noble of you in the sight of Allah is the most righteous of you. And by righteous, it means being righteous in the Muslim tradition is about being merciful, right? About being gracious, about living out the characteristics of Allah. So that's what being righteous is if you're merciful and if you're compassionate. And I like this bit at the end. Indeed, Allah is knowing and acquainted, right? You know what that means? Acquainted. God's watching you, right? So you can't fool Allah because God is aware of what you're doing. So you better do right according to this passage. So let's pray a little bit. Loving and gracious Spirit, we're thankful for these words of wisdom that come to us from a fellow faith tradition from our Abrahamic roots that shares with us many of the same principles of mercy and compassion, and that so often gets degraded and disrespected by people who would rather sow fear and misinformation. So we're grateful for the opportunity to hear these words, to take them to heart, and to know that the Spirit is at work in all of us in ways that are mysterious and wonderful, to bring us to a place of acceptance and understanding, of humility and vulnerability, of mercy and compassion. And as we hear these words for our lives this day, may the Spirit be at work in helping us leave this place, none of us having been unchanged. We gather as followers of Jesus. Amen. Do I need to review this week in America? Maybe this year? Just this week, we had someone walk into a Kroger and murder two African Americans simply because they were black and because he couldn't get into the church where he had hoped to get in and kill people. A suspect has been arrested for sending pipe bombs to the homes of two former presidents and other prominent Americans. And then just yesterday morning, a shooter terrorized a synagogue in Pittsburgh and murdered 11 people, injured 6 others. We need to be serious about addressing why these things are happening. What is motivating these acts of violence, these acts of hatred, fear, and ignorance, and why our efforts in trying to influence things for the good seem to fall on deaf ears? What can each of us do through our choices, through our actions, through our decisions, through our words, through our support to help build and strengthen our communities ahead of time? That we can take the initiative to know our Muslim neighbors, to know our Jewish neighbors, to know our Hispanic, our African American, our Asian, whatever it is, so that we can just by nature know that what we hear from those who would like to sow hate is not true. Because as we've said over and over again, we are called to love our neighbors as ourselves. Not as we love ourselves, as ourselves. They are a part of us. They are integrally integrated, interconnected with who we are. We cannot be who we are without our neighbors. And if we disrespect them, and if we blow them off, then we're disrespecting and blowing off an integral part of who we are. And if we truly believe that we're called to love our neighbors as ourselves, that they are an extension of who we are, then brothers and sisters, part of who we are, part of my being, was murdered yesterday. That's what it means. And until we are able to embrace that and engage with that in a way that makes us viscerally angry and sad and determined to do something different, we have not taken seriously the call to love our neighbors as ourselves. When we look at this passage from the Quran about the purpose of our having been created differently, It's there to set a standard to which we should aspire. It's not something we should, our differences shouldn't be denied. They shouldn't be avoided. They shouldn't be argued about. They're there, according to the Quran, in order for us to revel in and to learn about one another as we find out things about ourselves. And friends, we have got such a challenge as Christians, I almost don't know what to do. Because there are so many Christians that think Jesus was the first Christian. I had an occasion to meet with Bishop Jack Spong last month and hang out with him for a while. We revisited some of his greatest hits, and you've heard them from me before. And one of the things I remember him talking about was the reminder that Christianity is Jewish at its core. It was born in the Jewish world. Jesus, surprise, was a Jewish man. Never was anything but. His mother and his father were Jewish people. His disciples were all Jewish people. They lived and they moved in an environment that was Jewish. I would dare say that none of them would have imagined that there would be such a thing called Christianity 2,000 years later. They just had a different way of doing Judaism. And it's only the next generations that came along and out of fear and insecurity and competition, they drove a wedge between those Jews who thought Jesus was the Messiah and those who did not. And that was the beginning of so many of our problems. And we as Christians need to realize that we're culpable. As long as we continue to let it ride that Jesus is the only way and that everybody else is burning in hell, then we have blood on our hands. Because even without saying anything, we're approving of a message that degrades and discredits other faith traditions. And I don't think Jesus had anything to do with that. I think that people come back at me with that John 14:6, and they say, oh, well, Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life, and nobody comes to the Father but by me. Bull! Jesus said that in a context, if he even said it, after all, it's John. He said it in a context that he was speaking to those who were questioning him right there. He was talking to the people that were within earshot. And the people who wrote that, the gospel writer, was writing it as a propaganda piece and was totally denying what we saw going on in the previous gospels. Because remember, Matthew, Mark, and Luke came along much earlier, John much later. And in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Jesus is all about caring for the downtrodden, caring for those who were rejected by the community. He was all about reaching out to the poor, the widows, the stranger, the refugees, the orphans, and almost nothing about himself. It was all about how to care for others. Fast forward to John, it's just the opposite. Jesus almost never talks about the poor, the downtrodden, the widow, the stranger, the orphan. It's all about me. I mean, look through it. Jesus says, I am this, I am that, I am the other thing. It's like he's got narcissistic personality disorder. And we need to call BS on people who point to those passages out of context to place themselves in a place of superiority in order to diss other religions. Because what's happening is hate is being sanctioned by our pulpits, by religious people. And we have to push back. Because I think that it's not just evangelicals or conservative Christians. I think large swaths of United Methodism and other mainline churches and Roman Catholicism all lost our way. We've exchanged a commitment to the values that Jesus taught and lived for a convenience of the status quo. Because after all, the status quo makes us great and everybody else burning in hell, right? Even if we don't say anything, right? It's like, okay, I'm not going to say to a Jew's face, Jesus is the only way, and you're going to burn in hell. But guess what? If I don't say that that's wrong, then there's not a Jew anywhere that doesn't know that Christianity says, I think you're burning in hell. Right? That's not a great intro. That's not a great pickup line in the interfaith world, right? We've got to push back against that way of thinking. And as Imam Suleiman mentioned last night, he said that Martin Luther King's book, Why We Can't Wait, was a transformational book for him. And it was written, you've heard this from me before. It's a good thing that MLK was assassinated when he was, because up until that point, he was saying enough feel-good stuff that people were like, yay, yay, yay. And now we look back and say, whoo-hoo, yay, Martin Luther King. But if he were allowed to, if he would have been allowed to live and continue on the message, on the path that he was already on, speaking out against Vietnam, speaking out of the way our government is situated and structured to keep the poor poor and to keep the black community downtrodden, he would not be as popular a person today as he is today. He knew that we had to get out there and we needed to make a difference. And if you don't think that it's urgent in a week when pipe bombs have been mailed, when stores and synagogues have become racist killing fields, I don't know what else is going to wake you up. Did you know that in the first 6 months of 2017, six mosques were burned in Texas? Did you hear about that? What if six churches had been burned in Texas? Do you think we would have heard about that? This is the kind of fear that our brothers and sisters live in. And the problem is the people who feel bad but don't do anything in response. We have to be uncomfortable with hate, and we need to take action before it's simply a reaction. We need to take the initiative and recognize that our collective humanity is more important than any beliefs that we think we need to beat into somebody else's head. We need to stop, and this is a word that Imam Suleiman used last night, we need to stop otherizing people, right? He also pointed out an interesting statistic, a weird goober statistic, which I'm glad to see that other clergy have weird goober statistics other than just me. He pointed out that in Texas, in the past, the average size of a porch in Texas was 110 square feet. Right? Why is that? Because back in the day, you used to sit out on your porch and you used to wave at people walking by and your neighbors would come over and have a drink and you'd chat and you'd get to know your neighbors. Currently, the average size of a porch in a home built in Texas is 6 square feet. It's basically just a landing that you step out of the door onto, right? That says something about our cultural reality and how we need to find ways to get to know one another and take the initiative to do that, because ignorance is the fertile soil in which fear is being sown by people who are up to no good. I was really thrilled to hear what Imam Suleiman said last night, because it echoed exactly what we've been talking about the last few weeks in our study of James, who is all about just do it, right? And Imam Suleiman said, show me. Don't just talk about what your faith talks about. Show me in your actions what you believe your faith is calling you to do. He said, beauty cannot survive in a world that is drowning in ugly. Can you take that with you? Beauty cannot survive in a world that is drowning in ugly. And who is going to throw a life preserver to beauty? Who is going to dive into ugly and do everything in your power to save beauty? It's you and it's me. It's not any of our highfalutin whatever we want to say. It's in what we do every day. The other day, I was at the post office, and I have to tell you, it was a moment. I was in line, so I was already irritated, and there was only one person, right? You know the drill, right? So I'm waiting, and right in front of me is this really gorgeous young Sudanese couple. The woman is in a full hijab, and they have a gorgeous, probably not quite one-year-old daughter who is over her mom's shoulder and is bubbling and making googly eyes at me. Now, I cannot resist that. I cannot help striking up a conversation with them. And it was great. We were having this back and forth. And then this guy came in the post office. And he, you know, had a cap on and the shirt he was wearing and kind of his attitude and everything. All of my prejudices started to come to the forefront. I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So I found myself distracted from this conversation with this couple and starting to think about what very unpastoral thing was I going to need to say to this person when he dares make some comment, right? Why do we live in a world like that? Why do I have to think in line at the post office how I'm going to defend who is very likely a fellow American? They may be an immigrant or a refugee. But how is it that we've gotten to the point where I have to take on the responsibility to do that? It's because that's the way the world is. And guess what? You need to do it too. Until further notice. You need to prepare yourself and not be stupid and not be naive. Because this kind of hatred cannot be allowed to percolate just under the surface. How do I combat the kind of violence that we saw this week? By making sure that we reach out, befriend, and get to know those who would otherwise be targets of this kind of activity. We've had pipe bombs this week. We've had the murder of two African Americans at a grocery store. We had the slaying of 11 Jews in Shabbat service. Plus, we had the 20th anniversary of Matthew Shepard's death, where he was beaten and hung up on a fence to die because he was gay. It's been 20 years, and he was interned in the National Cathedral 20 years later because his parents could not bring themselves to inter him any place where they thought his monument would be desecrated. It's taken this long for them to get up the courage and for there to be a place for that to happen. 20 years. My resolve to promote interfaith understanding and to promote the acceptance of people of all gender identities, people who are refugees and immigrants, all of it has been renewed this week. And for me as a Christian pastor, one of the things that I'm taking very seriously is having to call out that Jesus is the only way Christian bigots. That's going to go over like a lead balloon with a lot of people. But guess what? It needs to be said. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel's words about, you remember where he said in a democracy like this, in a free democracy like this, a few might be guilty, but everyone is responsible. I don't think it goes far enough. I think we need to flip it on its head and say that we're not only responsible. If we don't take responsibility, then we are guilty. And we need to make that loud and clear. I don't know if you remember, a couple weeks ago I quoted Stephen Miller's rabbi, the White House assistant, who's been the author of the Separate Children from Their Parents at the Border and the Muslim Ban and all of that. And his childhood rabbi wrote him and said, "You're a big disappointment. You really have set Judaism back quite a ways. Thank you very much." And he wrote to Stephen Miller and said of us, "We are a coalition of the divinely mandated. We answer to a moral and ethical code that comes from the core of the universe and has many colorful and intricate manifestations. All of them speak one ultimate message of love, cooperation, understanding, and rescue." That's what we're on about. And we need to be careful, because if we don't speak up, we're going to let other people of faith set the agenda of division and hate. One more chapter in the rant. I've been shocked, but not surprised, the number of people who have said the answer to this problem is more guns. If just more of us were armed, if we would have had a pistol-packing rabbi, this would have all been resolved quite quickly, thank you. People who say that have made of guns an idol. They have put the ownership of guns before their commitment to whatever faith it is that they claim to practice. They've made that the most important thing in their lives. And people who argue with me on that, I say, you know, you just can't have this addiction to and idolatry of guns in the same sentence with doing what Jesus called us to do. There is one way to get over that, though. Get yourself a new Jesus, right? You're going to have to figure out a Jesus that's going to support the idea that guns are going to solve everything. So this week has been tough for me. I don't know if it's been tough for you as well, but it makes me sad that Christians think that the end-all and be-all of how to relate to the divine is their way of looking at it. And I need you to help me going forward to try and figure out a way to get that message out there. Because it's not going to be smiled upon by people when their hair is on fire saying, "What do you mean you got to..." You have to pat their hair out and say, "Let's talk this through." Because otherwise, we're in for more tears, more heartbreak, more pain. The motto of the United Methodist Church right now is that we are called to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. My question is, why is make disciples of Jesus Christ first? Shouldn't we be on about transforming the world in the name of Jesus? That's what motivates us. We're doing what Jesus asked us to do. We're just not making it a criteria that you have to believe in Jesus the way we believe in Jesus in order to be a part of transforming the world or making that transformation legitimate. So we've got some changes that we need to make. But we also need to be on about responding in moments like this. So I hope that you can join me at 3:00 today at Chabad so that we can just, with our presence, be supportive. Because we're called to our stream of thought today. Our calling is tikkun olam, acts of kindness, mercy, justice, to heal, repair, and redeem the world. That's the core of Judaism. And friends, that's the core of Christianity, isn't it? If you can take out the divisive stuff that keeps us at one another's throats, this is what Judaism, Islam, and Christianity is all about. You know what? You know who else is on about this? Everybody who takes humanity seriously and values the dignity of every human being. You take this seriously. Let me finish with words from our president, Abraham Lincoln, who put it so eloquently 150 years ago. From whence shall we expect the approach of danger? Shall some transatlantic military giant step the earth and crush us at a blow? Never! All the armies of Europe and Asia could not by force take a drink from the Ohio River or make a track on the Blue Ridge in the trial of 1,000 years. No, if destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men and women, we will live forever or die by suicide. Friends, it's up to us. We are a coalition of the divinely mandated, called to live out acts of kindness and mercy and justice, to heal, repair, and redeem the world. And it's not just about doing it in reaction to when tragedy strikes. It's about finding ways in our own lives, with our neighbors, with our friends, to do it every day. That is the new challenge that I am once again bringing to myself, and I hope that you would join me as well. See you today at 3 o'clock.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community, or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.